My name is Kevin Murphy, and this is the Mission Innovation Podcast.
But now we're doing it, and it's done because we've very strongly felt that our mission and both of our missions and the impact of the committee was a lot more important than a competition that we had seen historically.
The Mission Innovation Podcast recently attended the Catholic Health Association Assembly, held on June 10th to 12th in San Diego. There, we asked a diverse group from different health systems and organizations across the country, what are the new trends or ideas that you are seeing that are advancing mission? First, we heard them share about new types of collaborations addressing community needs. I'm here live at the CHA National Assembly with Denise Hess, Executive Director of Supportive Care Coalition. And we're asking the question of what are the new directions, new ideas that are coming up within Catholic healthcare and healthcare in general. And Denise, what are you seeing?
What I see coming up specifically in the world of palliative care, so that's the world that the coalition lives in, is very exciting innovations in provider-payer models that actually have a lot of overlap with mission.
Now unpack that for me, provider-payer models.
Exactly. And frankly, the whole thing was surprising to me. So provider-payer models are partnerships between insurance companies, if you will, and providers, doctors, nurses, hospitals, medical groups, and they forge an agreement together to provide a certain type of care to a certain type of population for a certain fee structure.
So insurers are entering into collaborative partnerships to help advance palliative care because they see the value.
Exactly.
Great.
Exactly. And the beauty of these models is that they are usually not based on a fee-for-service model, kind of fading away model, and are based on a per-patient, per-month reimbursement model, which allows the providers to be very innovative in how they provide the services, who provides the services, where they provide the services, because they receive a fixed reimbursement per month for the population that they're caring for.
Right, and I'm assuming the insurers see that the preventative value of palliative care with respect to their work and their business, so to speak. In other words, the earlier you're involved in palliative care, the earlier you're aware and engaged in symptom management, the better outcomes for the patient. Insurers would say better outcomes for them as well.
Exactly. And so when I first heard about this, I kind of expected it to stop there. Like, okay, it's good for us as healthcare systems. It's good for patients, you know, kind of that quadruple or triple or quadruple aim approach. But what surprised me is that, and this is happening right now in Blue Shield of California, they are also doing things that we in Catholic healthcare would recognize as mission-focused actions and initiatives. For example, because they have this freedom in this different type of reimbursement structure, they are beginning, using the money that comes from the insurance company, to address the social determinants of healthcare. So they're not only fully staffing interdisciplinary palliative care teams, but they are building out programs and initiatives to coordinate with community services in making sure that this same patient population, they get a hot meal every day. They have a car ride to this doctor's appointment that they can't miss because they only get there once a month. They have caregiver respite. We know that caregiver burnout, you know, we want to keep people in their home as they live with serious illness. They want to be in their home, but it requires the help and assistance of caregivers, whether that's a family member, friend, or outside person. It's a very taxing role, often not compensated at all, a lot of burnout. So social determinants in the whole person, whole family sense of the word. And so that to me is a very exciting innovation in, like I said, the payer provider model that's addressing mission concerns that are really at the heart of what we know and value in mission in Catholic healthcare. If we think of mission as welcoming the stranger, caring for the whole person, reaching the one who's been marginalized, whether by geography, by culture. That's what these models are allowing to happen in the world of serious illness care. It's very exciting.
Kevin, I'm Katul Patel. I'm the Senior Vice President of Operations for CHI in the Pacific Northwest, and also have a role as a CEO of CHI Franciscan, which is based in Tacoma.
And obviously, I think we're all kind of coming to the awareness that there are public health types of issues, social determinants of health,
sure,
that we can't fix on our own.
Right.
We have to collaborate with those people of goodwill in our community who want to come together to serve a certain need.
Right.
Within the community, and it sounds like you're doing that kind of outreach.
Yeah, I will tell you, just historically, I've worked in six different cities in my career. I've never seen, as an example, the needs of behavioral health and mental health as significant as there are in the Pacific Northwest. You know, certainly at this time, there's a lot of discussion around the opioid crisis, but when you look in the Pacific Northwest with the number of homeless that we have there, where the amount of behavioral health needs there are, we're finding new partners to work with. And I'll give you a very good example. For many years, MultiCare, which is also based in Tacoma, was a tremendous competitor of ours. You know, we always grew sometimes at the expense of them and us and them at the expense of us. But we bonded, we've united. And part of it obviously starts with a common vision and a focus and respect in terms of history and mission. But you have two organizations that were competing so strongly for many years, and now the two organizations have come together to address what is a pretty significant issue in terms of our community, which is behavioral health and mental health. And we're opening up a 120-bed hospital, a behavioral health hospital in January. So this is, you know, many years ago, I will tell you, two competitors coming together to truly advance and affect, if you will, the needs of the community you would not have seen in Tacoma. But now we're doing it. And it's done because we very, very strongly felt that our mission and both of our missions and the impact of the community was a lot more important than a competition that we had seen historically.
The second theme we heard in our conversations were new types of impacts intentionally focused on making a difference. So we're here live at the CHA Assembly, and this is a special treat for me. This is Kevin Murphy talking to Kevin Murphy.
So my name is Kevin Murphy. Like you said, I am the system lead for palliative care for Providence St. Joseph's Health.
And Kevin, what are you seeing? What's the new trend, the new idea in healthcare that you're seeing that maybe even has a tie to mission and it's helping to advance mission as well?
Well, as you know, I work under Ira Byock in the Institute for Human Caring, and
right,
we're moving whole person care forward, the entirety of treating the patient, the family, the entire system. And as the system lead for palliative care, what we are trying to do is bring palliative care to the patients. All of the around the country, we have established palliative care service lines within the hospitals, but that's not where every patient is. Patients come to the hospital when they're very sick, but we want to be going out to them. And so community-based palliative care, clinics, home-based services, embedded in oncology and heart centers, but more importantly, the very remote patients, the rural patients who can't get to the tertiary, the larger medical centers, how do we see them? And that's technology. So telehealth, telepalliative care being the modality of interfacing with patients who might be 100, 200, 500 miles away.
So obviously not waiting for patients to come to a hospital. You're building infrastructure to be able to see, identify patients who could use your service long before they would ever be connected with a hospital, maybe even before they connect with their own family physician. Is that kind of advanced contact even possible?
Absolutely. So one of the things that every patient that comes to the hospital has in common is they're very sick. Nobody comes to the hospital when they're well. And so when you're making decisions in a state of crisis, those decisions are impacted by the state of crisis. So if we can move further upstream, like we have been for the last few years, and like this, the national push is for moving into community palliative care, you're making decisions when you're healthy and you're well. You're defining and deciding, driving the direction that you want your life to go for the rest of your life.
Kevin, my name is Brian Yanofchik. I am the Senior Vice President for Sponsorship with Bon Secours Health System. I've got responsibility for our St. Petersburg, Florida market, which is post-acute care, and then also our business development group for the system. Those are two areas that I represent our sponsor.
So a little busy. That's
great work. Very diverse.
What are you seeing that really intrigues you, or you're noticing that we're focusing a little more on?
I think one of the most interesting things I'm seeing now is another phase in the work that we've done with community health. For many years, we've been trying lots of things, funding lots of efforts that in one way or another, we think are meeting certain community needs. What we have not been able to do is to show impact.
Give me a couple examples of those community projects that you might have been involved in the past and still are.
Okay, I think of some in the past involving our efforts to enroll people in insurance who are eligible, whether it's children or adults in expanded Medicaid, et cetera, those kinds of things. Other projects that began to address some of the social determinants of health, you know, housing, jobs, education, those kinds of things. And in the past, I think we've done a lot in that area. However, it's been very difficult for us to show what impact or what difference they've made. We do these things, and it looks good that we do them, and people appreciate them. But do they really make a difference in terms of some of the indicators that are used to determine the general health of a population in a certain area?
So you're saying that now more attention is going to tools or analytics or...
Yes.
Or whatever, to really make sure that the way you invest in those kind of things in the community, they really demonstrate they're making a difference. Can you give me a couple examples about how you're evolving in that focus?
Yeah, you know, one example I can think of is an application that I was recently involved in evaluating related to a support for early childhood education. The application itself did not have a lot of background or data related to, you know, any history of impact on the program. So when we pushed the applicant to try and provide more of that kind of background, turned out that it was actually a national program that had been sponsored by another well-known group in the country, and there was data, you know, that showed that they had made a difference in the lives of younger children and their families, and so they were able to, you know, to connect that to other experience in other parts of the country, but also gave us an opportunity to say, so then what should we expect? You know, when this project is over, you know, when the funding ends, what kind of results should we expect based on that experience? So I think it's important, you know, for us to look out. Sometimes if we might have a good idea locally, and it's important to find out if that's been done or thought of elsewhere, and if there's any lessons learned that we should consider as we try something new in any of our local markets.
I'm Judy Wagner, and I serve as the Vice President of Mission Services for Providence St. Joseph Health and St. Mary's, which is in Apple Valley, California. I would say that for us in the high desert, it's really taken a look at what can we do in the world of obesity. And we're kind of doing something new in the sense of looking at fifth graders. You know, fifth graders is kind of that time period where they're starting to do a little more social, getting together with friends,
sure,
versus trying to do video games, et cetera. So how do we get them motivated? How do we get them out of that kind of mindset? And so we've been working with 6 schools in the high desert kind of as a pilot to look at opportunities to get them focused on movement, as well as just taking a look at the 7 dimensions of wellness. And when I talk about the 7 dimensions, you know, we often think about physical activity, but what else is that? There's the emotional piece. There's also social. How do we get kids to get together versus being so much on their phones? That becomes their social life versus the other. I think the other one that's unique in that aspect is spirituality. How do you really take spirituality into the public schools? So it's more of a focus of, what do I know about myself? Who am I? How do I go deeper in the sense of maybe journaling each night? What does that look like for me? What was my day like? What excited me? What made me not as excited? Maybe it's math. I didn't like math. Or
questions that fifth graders can connect to.
Yes.
My name is Gay Woods. I am the System Director of a Community Benefit for SCL Health. And SCL stands for the Sisters of Charity of Leavenworth.
And Gay, you've been involved in healthcare for how long?
Oh, let's see. Should I really tell? Definitely over 10 years.
So great experience, great breadth of experience. what are you seeing that's being piloted, tested, that's having impact and advancing mission?
I think one of the things that I've been focusing on at SCL is really trying to incorporate digital technology options into the work,
right,
really as a way to bridge the distance gap. For SCL, we have hospitals between Colorado, Montana, and Kansas.
So far away.
Yeah. And within Montana, we have three facilities there in very different communities, from Billings to Miles City to Butte, and all very different in terms of just access and availability. So I've been really encouraging my mission leaders and community benefit folks to think of the telephone as kind of our access door.
Interesting.
And to think virtually about how do I really get to the individual using that as a tool to kind of bridge that distance. And so one of the things that we've done is, because mental health is a priority and really such a burden for all of our health systems in different ways, we started using the Lantern tool, which is an app-based cognitive behavioral therapy tool that focuses on anxiety and stress management and mindfulness, and has been a great gap piece used by practicing psychologists and psychiatrists. And so we were using it internally with our own associates and decided on the community benefits side to, you know, what if we took this tool into community as another level of support for the gap that is there right now for just mental health services.
Right. So you started with your own employees, your own colleagues, tested it there. It worked. And now you're taking it into the community.
Yes.
Great.
Yes. And it's been doing very well. It's coming along as we kind of find different settings to apply it in. And a lot of the work that they have done early on was on college campuses and community college campuses. So
what's its biggest impact? In other words, how does the app help those you're trying to serve?
Yeah, so it actually has kind of a progressive aspect to it. So once you launch the app and begin, it does a level of screening, basically to kind of see where you are, and then prescribes over 12 weeks a number of activities for you. And there is an actual coach that's available via the app as well that you can interact with for deeper discussions or deeper help, essentially. But for me, I did it because one of the things that I've also been focusing on just for the team or just to begin to raise up is the need to take care of the healers. That,
sure.
Yeah, so much is going out from us, and just the level of pace of what is going on in healthcare overall is very stressful, and it's just demanding. And I think everyone loves the work, and we're very good at coming to the aid of others, but oftentimes we're not doing it for ourselves.
Father Charlie Bouchard from CHA. Charlie, would you help our listeners by introducing yourself?
Happy to do that, Kevin. I am Senior Director of Theology and Ethics at the Catholic Health Association. And I think one of the most important trends, or at least needs, that we're seeing and trying to respond to is finding a new generation of leaders for Catholic healthcare, especially in the areas of ethics and mission. You know, we have programs, Masters of Health Administration, for example. Undergraduates know about those. They get ready to do them.
Right.
They go into executive leadership. That is not true with ethics and mission. We've discovered that most undergraduates don't have a clue about these career possibilities, and even less a thought that this could be a vocation for them, because it really involves bringing their faith with them and applying it to the work that they do. So we've begun a process that we call succession planning in the biggest sense of the term, to try to raise awareness about these vocational opportunities in Catholic healthcare among both undergraduates and graduate students, and also to ask our systems to rethink their approach to internships and fellowships, because once we get the attention of these younger people, we've got to have something to offer them.
Right.
So I think this is going to be a very important task for us in the future. We really have a crisis, especially for Ephesus. We don't have enough. We want people who really understand this as part of a ministry of the church. So we're going to work with undergraduate and graduate programs and with the systems as well to try to create a new approach to identifying the kind of candidates we need to keep healthcare vital in the future.
Good morning. It's Kevin Vijayavikrama from Deloitte. I'm a partner at Deloitte, served Catholic healthcare ministries for more than 15 years. The trend or the idea for me is the importance of consumer experience and the customer experience in healthcare. That's a trend that we have been facing with over the last several years in healthcare. And when I think about customer experience, when I reflect on Catholic healthcare, I think about the notion of sacred encounters. So if you define what customer experience is, customer experiences or consumer experience is really about getting to know the customer, getting to know the consumer as a whole, getting to know the human being about what their needs, their expectations, their preferences, their family, friends, their community, getting to know them.
So the technologies that we've used in the past to get the input from patients about patient experience, about their experience of the ways we're delivering healthcare are changing. Do you have a couple of new trends or new pilots or tests that are being done to do that even better than we've done it in the past?
I think finally healthcare has the right technology. We have the right clinical information systems. We have the ERP systems, and there are a lot of applications and databases now that healthcare can finally deploy. Right? If you think about really managing population health, now we have the resources, the tools, and the talent to do it. If you think about healthcare 10, 20 years ago, we talked about healthcare reform. We never really could do it. But I think ultimately today, we have the opportunity to do it because we have the technology to sense and analyze the data. So now we could basically be able to look at a consumer, a patient, a customer to understand what their preferences are. So we have tools nowadays that can analyze the customer's preferences, their purchasing preferences. If you think about a good example of somebody having a baby, before they even have a baby, now we can predict that by looking at their purchasing history, right? So that's the basic, the junction that we are in, that we can change healthcare to help us focus on the individual member, consumer, whoever, however you want to describe it. But I think in Catholic healthcare, what's unique about this is, and what's unique to Catholic healthcare is that we have this focus on the sacred encounter. So every encounter, whether it's through technology, whether it's virtual care, whether it's physical care at the local hospital or the clinic, we're able to have that sacred encounter, understanding that individual's preferences, that individual's family preferences, their broader community preferences, and use that data to better predict when they're going to get sick next, when is their next milestone in life and family. And that's the opportunity that we have in Catholic healthcare today. So we have the technology, we have the platform. More importantly, we have the value set and what we are here to serve our communities in. And that's going to make us very different in how we make impact in healthcare.
I'm Dan Dwyer. I am Executive Director of Theology and Ethics for Providence St. Joseph Health. Been in this role for about 10 months now. I've been a mission leader at Queen of the Valley in Napa and a regional mission leader for Northern California in the St. Joseph Health family.
And then previous to that, even, you were with Trinity.
I was with Trinity Health in Michigan for 5 years, was the senior VP for mission for the system. So I've been doing this kind of work.
You've been around a bit.
I've been around a long time, since they invented dirt.
It's a great experience, great spectrum of experience. What are the trends or new ideas you're seeing right now?
Well, you know there's a lot of interest recently in compassion fatigue, in resiliency and well-being of caregivers, struggles in dealing with moral distress. Lots of really...
You see this a lot, absolutely.
A lot of stuff. In fact, it's one of the indicators of a need for a strong ethics theology program. And along the way, we've discovered that something called Schwartz Rounds is a wonderful way to offer caregivers and others opportunities to talk about what it's like to be in a situation of moral distress, a situation where one's inclination is to thicken the armor around oneself so that we can deal with the pain and suffering of patients and families and difficulties in communities, social issues that, you know, we talk about the social determinants of health. There's a lot of burden that we carry as right. caregivers in the world that we work in.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong. Schwartz Rounds, they have a website. It's a particular model for clinicians to speak about a tough choice, a tough event, with the colleagues that they had to do that with and kind of debrief a bit.
That's exactly right. And it a number of us over the years had grand rounds that were devoted to difficult cases. And they would be what to do about this difficult case, but they'd also be what it was like to be a part of that situation. Schwartz Rounds focuses entirely on what it feels like to be in the presence of a patient who is threatening you violently, who's in the presence of an infant who's dying of a terminal illness. These gatherings bring people together to share with one another what it's like.
Because these moments have an impact on caregivers.
Very
right?
much so.
And you might think that they're a professional who's just offering a service, but obviously the suffering, the concern has impact on them as well.
It does, and it accumulates. And if we don't talk about this and talk about it in a room full of people who've been where we are, they just accumulate and accumulate. And I think it's one of the reasons why some people quit the clinical world or the leadership world, because it gets to be such a heavy burden that they don't talk about it with one another.
Now you've tested this in the hospitals that you're engaged in, mm-hmm. you work at. What's been the impact? What have you seen among your colleagues when this model is actually done?
Well, at the moment of the actual time, and it's about an hour long lunchtime usually session, you witness people getting some pretty difficult stuff off their chest, sharing. There's a panel that starts the conversation off, but very soon a facilitator will open up the conversation to the people that are in the room. The reports I've received from the people who've attended these sessions is that it's very helpful to them, very meaningful. It's nice to know that you're not alone feeling the way you feel. It gives people almost a cathartic kind of experience of I've been struggling with this experience I had with this patient and family, and to be able to share this with people who I work with every day. It lightens that load, and it helps me to get some perspective. It's not a problem-solving session. You know, it's not about someone in the room giving someone counseling about something. It's really about being heard and being honored, really, in sharing your experience.
Hi, Kevin. I'm Victoria King. I'm the System Chief Nursing Officer for Peace Health. Peace Health, 10 hospitals located in the Pacific Northwest in Washington, Oregon, and Alaska.
And so we're looking at new trends and new ideas that are intriguing.
So as I think about that as a nursing leader, I really think about the trend towards wellness and away from illness and the opportunity to provide preventative medicine, which is where I think nursing really excels. So as a nurse, I begin to look at these opportunities for prevention, for us to step into a space outside of hospitals. Traditionally, nursing's really been sort of contained in those four walls and brick and mortar of a hospital. Now the opportunity when we look at preventative care and follow-up care and really beginning to teach as well. So the opportunity to teach people to be healthy. I see so many different opportunities for nursing. That's a trend that I see coming. It's been there for the last 4 or 5 years, but really starting to move into a different world for us now, I think.
And not unlike the original roles of the sister congregations who came, no bricks and mortar there when they came. They worked in the communities.
Absolutely. When you think of the two nurses who are the legacy of Peace Health, the two nurses who were also nuns who started Peace Health and started this mission and this vision that we have for healthcare, it really goes back to that, doesn't it? It sort of goes back to the beginning
right.
of what we started. They came across the country to take care of people in the Pacific Northwest, and here we are all these years later still thinking about that same kind of care. And how do we begin? So that comes with connecting with the communities and really setting up those programs where we begin to teach people how to not be put in the hospital. And that's a very different way of thinking about healthcare as we move forward into the new millennium and really start to think about how do we keep people out of the hospital? How do we really coach and mentor and teach them to be healthy?
I'm Marianne Sladich-Lance, and I lead our formation work in Providence St. Joseph Health and have been a part of the mission world in Catholic healthcare for over 20 years or so.
So lots of experience.
Well, I don't know about experience, but lots of years. You know, this last year and a half or so, we've had the wonderful opportunity to put new words around what we would say is the mission for Providence St. Joseph Health. And we invited every caregiver, so about 114,000 people in the organization, to just basically talk to us about two things. The first one was, what do you think makes this place tick? So what's most important about the mission from your perspective?
Right.
And so that obviously elicited just all kinds of different things. And then as we were coming together, and you know, when we think about a trend, everybody's partnering together for a variety of reasons. And so this provided us an opportunity to ask our caregivers, what would you consider to be a treasure of either St. Joseph Health or Providence, whichever organization they were representing? What are the treasures that as we move forward into the future, you want to make sure that we bring forward? And all of that was to invite caregivers to really participate in how we talk about ourselves. What is our identity? What do we want to make sure that that we know about ourselves as we do the work that we do in service to our communities?
Right.
And so those conversations were just phenomenal, led by our mission leaders. And so once then, we came with some words that now have become our statement of mission, values, vision, and then promise, which is another statement that's important to us. We've taken the opportunity to go back to every caregiver in Providence St. Joseph Health and share the words that collectively we've come up with, and to invite them again to reflect and to talk about the words that were important to them. And what's happened now, this is a year and a half, so say 2017, 2018, our caregivers are already anticipating, what might we do in 2019 to invite them into a conversation? And so I think advancing mission internally and to engage our caregivers in an ongoing conversation about what's most important to them, how they can flourish in the organization, what makes them inspired, what makes them tick, and then therefore when we link arms with all 113,000 of us, at least today, what that can do for the work of Providence St. Joseph Health, Catholic healthcare, in service to the communities within which we serve.
So the process, the inquiry, the conversation becomes formative in itself.
Absolutely.
Doesn't it? Finally, we heard in these conversations a shift to a broader vision of mission innovation.
My name is Gabriela Robles, and I'm the Vice President of Community Partnerships for Providence St. Joseph Health. The work that I have the opportunity to do on a daily basis is to invest in our communities through grant making to our nonprofit partners throughout California and Texas at this time.
And even before work in healthcare, you were strongly vested in the work of communities to better themselves and to make better communities.
My entire career has been in the nonprofit sector. I think it stems from my upbringing. My parents immigrated from Mexico in the early 60s, and it was always about how do you give back. And so my career path has always been in that role in working in nonprofits and now here with Providence St. Joseph Health.
Right. So we're here talking about new trends, new ideas that are advancing mission. When you hear that, what do you see in your area that's being tested that's new?
You know, what's exciting is really not limiting health to the clinical and really looking at partnerships more broadly, really looking, in my case, the nonprofit sectors, those organizations that maybe in the past we gave donations to, but now we're saying, truly, you are a partner because you are truly connected in the local community. So how do we invest in the infrastructure of these nonprofits to continue the work that we are committed to, all in alignment with our mission? And the beauty of it is we have been partners for decades, but now we're having a different relationship.
Right.
That first started with our community clinics. At one point, we owned the clinics, and now they're FQHCs, federally right. qualified right. health yeah. centers. And so now they're at a different place.
Talk a bit about when people hear federally qualified healthcare centers, what are those?
So these are community health centers. They're clinics. A lot of them also provide social services. And they are positioned to get a higher reimbursement from the federal government for their services. And they're also really able to sustain their work in serving the economically poor because of that higher reimbursement. But we also see them as anchors. So, you know, we see our hospitals as anchors, but right. really it's the FQHCs that provide access to healthcare in the community and also looking at other issues of concern such as housing, transportation, food, which aligns with who we are and our mission. So how do we help develop that infrastructure so that we're not working in silos?
I'm Therese Lysott. I am on faculty at Loyola University Chicago, where I direct the graduate programs in healthcare mission leadership, housed now newly at the Nisswanger Institute for Bioethics at the Stritch School of Medicine. You know, I like to work inductively. You know, I kind of like to put my ear to the ground and hear what people are saying in Catholic healthcare. That was the method I used in constructing Caritas and Communion, the book on Catholic identity that I did for CHA.
Right.
And being here at the Assembly the last two or three years, I've been hearing exponentially the word formation. There's a need for formation. People walk up to the booth, and they're talking about formation for sponsors, for board members, for senior leaders. And now for mission leaders, this is sort of a new...
That's interesting.
A new bubble that people are concerned about this second stage or ongoing formation for mission leaders, which is interesting to me.
So these are mission leaders who have gone through education or formation, in formation already. They've probably been through a program maybe like yours or others, and they're in the mission leader role now. But they're almost ready for stage two.
Right.
In other words, they're coming up against their own gaps in the work, and they know they need further reflection, further integration.
Right, okay. Right. I mean, I think one of the things we've assumed is if you educate someone to go be a mission leader,
right.
they are going to go form other people, right? They're in charge of the formation of all these folks and all these associates in their systems. But no one has kind of turned the lens back on them and thought about, well, you know, a graduate degree is really important. It educates you, but it's not necessarily formation in the same way.
Okay.
And mission is so broad and evolving that you just get, you know, a little bit of competency and everything, and then you get into the job and you start to go deep. And formation is more about, you know, how do you integrate your own person with this work, and how do you do the integration between the different silos, right? Between caring spiritually for your associates, doing your leadership formation, doing the budget conversations. There's a lot more work that I think needs to be done on that level. Because one thing that is not so much on the radar is especially the spiritual formation of the mission leaders. You know, I think a lot of people come into this role, as you know, from all these different backgrounds, development, finance, informatics. Some people come in from chaplaincy or spiritual care, and those people have been trained how to do their own spiritual formation, take care of that aspect of themselves. But I think other mission leaders, that's never been on their radar. So I think adding that to the mix for themselves personally and then thinking about how do they then do that for others in their system, that's on the horizon.
I'm George Avila, and I'm the Vice President of Mission Integration for Latin America for Christus Health.
Now, George, this episode is on new trends, new ideas. I think you are a new trend. You spend 50% of your time as a mission leader with Christus Health in Texas, but you spend the other 50% in what countries?
Christus is, you know, we've had the opportunity to be able to expand ministry into Mexico, Chile, and Colombia. the part that I get the opportunity to do is to really serve that bridge between Christus Health, with, based out of Texas, and then really building these connections or these bridges with these three Latin American countries. As we really try to look at our model, we talk about being a one Christus. And as we look at that, we want to make sure that our ministries are connected, that they have characteristics related to Christus, they have our Catholic identity, recognizing that we also have partners in those countries that might not have been Catholic before we came into that ministry.
And I'm sure the three cultures of those three Latin American countries, while people might have the assumption that they might be similar, I'm assuming they're also very unique.
They are, Kevin, and I think that's been a learning for us, as I think even myself, I speak Spanish. I've been blessed that I've been able to do that. But although I speak Spanish and I am Mexican, I'm very different than our colleagues that grew up in Mexico, that Spanish is their first language. And so I think that was one of the first things that we've had to recognize as Christus is not only we have to be sensitive to the language, we also have to be sensitive to the culture of each country and what their own experience has been. And culture is so important. Communication style. How do we talk to one another? How do we get our messages across? The U.S., we tend to be a little bit more direct as we're trying to execute strategies. And in Latin America, it's very relationship-based. And so we've really learned and we've transformed our own culture at Christus is that it's relationship first. So your introductions at a meeting might take 5 minutes in the U.S., but now we've turned is that it might take 30 minutes for you to be able to present, introduce yourself, because it's all about that relationship, and then you're able to move forward and execute on strategy after that.
So that kind of, not necessarily even outreach, but trying to think of service, not just within the U.S., but within other countries, and identifying the unique needs of those communities, I think that's a trend and a new idea in itself.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that we've been able to do, you've mentioned the needs of the community. Well, in these three countries, providing community benefit, which is something that is required here in the U.S., and we have a long tradition of that, it's not necessarily required in those countries, but we've been clear that part of being part of Christus Health, part of us living out our tradition, is that we care for the poor and vulnerable in our community. So we've actually gone ahead and implemented the whole community health needs assessment process in all three Latin American countries, engaging stakeholders around that, engaging in a strategic plan about how we will be improving health in these communities, and really changing that shift about it's not just giving the service, it's how we're going to transform the health of the entire population. So we've developed strategic plans around adolescent mental health and around managing adult diabetes in these communities, and really seeing we're going to be in these low-income communities for 10 to 15 years to really be able to transform and impact health there.
I'm Cody McSellers-McCray, and I'm the Regional Director of Community Health for Presence Health, Presence Amita Health.
Great. And you've been involved in healthcare for?
About 15 years, public 15 health, years. Healthcare. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So great experience. And we're talking about new trends and new ideas. What are you seeing?
So a few things. One in particular, obviously, is social determinants and screening and referring patients for social determinants across the system. So not only screening, but follow up as well.
Right.
So using technology to do that and provide data and reporting, which is new in the community health space. So
not usually done, that kind of use
no.
of technology, no?
It's new over the last few years.
Okay.
So it's done now, but it's not common still within hospital systems. They're still adopting it. But there are quite a few out there, such as, you know, your university hospitals, Henry Ford, Kaiser Permanente, who's already kind of adopted.
So obviously a more proactive approach.
Right.
Proactive approach. But even the social determinants you speak about, unpack that a bit more for me. How is that being addressed?
Right. So let's think about if a patient comes in, not necessarily having to be poor or on Medicaid or Medicare, but any patient, if your hospital is screening them for housing, domestic violence, food, jobs, childcare,
right.
things like that, where they can identify and then actually be connected to a resource that's reliable, reputable, and then followed up with, like, how were you able to access that resource? How was it? You know, would you recommend it to someone else? Like, that's all a strategy now that hospitals is working with, you know, community organizations and community partners to do. And then running reports on it, you know, like what are we seeing a trend in our hospitals so that we can now address through programming, through partnerships, or through policies. So.
And then once that patient is back home, you're kind of following up with them there.
Right. So back home or whatever, you know, it could be if they come back to the hospital within a certain time frame, you check in to make sure that they got what they needed. Otherwise, you continue to help them till they get what they need.
Hi, I'm Fred Najjar. I'm the Senior Vice President for Philanthropy at Dignity Health.
And Fred, what would you say is a new trend or new idea that you're seeing evolve in healthcare right now?
Well, because I'm in the world of philanthropy, I'll say one of the things I think is most important as we move forward is looking, historically, we've looked within the walls of our hospital for our fundraising, working closely with our hospital leadership to make sure that everything we raise funds for, whether it be for capital projects or for programs, was raised for that. And
sure.
I think now the trend is moving that we'll always do what's within the hospital, but that we have to look beyond that and look what the needs are within the community. Population
right.
health is very critical.
Right.
And I see philanthropy being very integral to helping us really move forward into the community in terms of providing resources.
Right, right. And in healthcare in general, regardless, philanthropy, mission. I mean, even architects who are designing hospitals now are designing smaller spaces,
right? Exactly.
And so we're all trying to figure out how to deliver better care in the community and proactively. And so no doubt that would have that shift, that would have that impact in philanthropy, just like it does everywhere else.
Right. And I think that was going to beg for us to have partnerships. I mean, even in the initiative we have at Dignity Health around human trafficking, we know that healthcare is only a piece of that work that we're doing philanthropically. We need to connect with resources in the community, whether they be people in housing, jobs, and other forms, so that we're connecting those survivors in a way that they can, you know, flourish. So.
Today, we heard our guests offer new trends and ideas in Catholic healthcare achieving mission innovation. Appreciation to our guests and listeners. Thanks, everyone. I'm Kevin Murphy, and this is the Mission Innovation Podcast.